Welcome to all of you. Thank you so much for being here. Today is Tuesday, March 19th, 2024, and this is the City Council Study Meeting for the City of South Jordan. My name is Dawn Ramsey. I have the privilege of welcoming all of you here as mayor of this city and being joined up here by our excellent City Council. Thank you so much for being here. And Mr. Harris, I believe, will be with us soon. Thank you to our staff who are here, members of the public joining us, those presenting and any watching this or who will watch this, we welcome you. We are going to open our meeting tonight with an invocation by Councilmember Kathy Johnson.
Our Heavenly Father, we're indeed grateful that we're able to meet at this time to discuss the issues of the city. We ask thee for thy guidance and for thy inspiration, that we may be able to fulfill the needs of our community, that they will be just and serve the people who live here well. We're especially grateful for all those who serve the city, for the police, the fire, and all the other services that are provided. We're grateful for those who have stepped up and are willing to provide these services and to treat others with respect. We especially ask thee to be with us this evening, that all may be heard, and that all points of view may be listened to with respect and guidance. In the name of thy Son, Jesus Christ, amen.
Amen.
Thank you, Mrs. Johnson. Okay, mayor and council coordination. Anybody have anything you'd like to bring up, discuss?
I think just in the next meeting, at some point, maybe during staff comments, just review for Thursday's press conference.
Yes, we plan. That would be great. Yeah. Okay. All right, then we are going to move on to item D for the sake of time. Just a review of our regular council meeting agenda, which we always do. We have a couple of public hearing items. We had our conversation before. We had a presentation that Dan Tingey did about a month ago on our impact fees, our public safety impact fees. So that is coming before us. We have the readopting of the city's construction standards, which, you know, since, when was it, 2017 when they changed that? When was it? Anyway, a couple years ago, they made it required. Maybe it was 19. I can't remember what year, but anyway.
It was 2017.
Was it 17? Okay. Wow, thanks. That's good. Yeah. Since then, these construction standards have to be reapproved every year, right? They come before us, and this is something that we're required in the state law to do. We have a portion of right-of-way in Daybreak. We've talked about some of these little vacation of just a small portion of right-of-way. On the west side of Prosperity Road, it's 163 feet total. So we will look at that. And then we have a rezone to be considered, to rezone a property. One single property, and we'll get more information about that unless anybody has any questions right now. My understanding is, for the most part, that it's, you know, it's a parcel right in the middle of an entire developed neighborhood that has a max zoning, and it's a large parcel that if it's split in half, it's a large parcel. If it's split in half, then it upsets the overall allowance of the neighborhood. But if just that parcel itself is rezoned, they can split it in half and it doesn't mess with everything around it. So we can have Stephen give us more information if anybody wants that, you know, specifically, and we'll talk about it later. But does anybody have any questions about the agenda right now? Okay. All right, if not, then we're going to move ahead. For the sake of time, we're going to get us back on track. Look at that, 4:45. Janelle is not here, right?
Yes.
Okay, so we have Tiffany Parker here with us. Who's going to present a couple of folks who have submitted applications to serve on our South Jordan Arts Council. So please.
This is Sarah and Lucas. I'll let Sarah go first. Just go down the line and
tell us a little bit about yourself and why you want to serve on the Arts Council. First of all, thank you so much for coming in, and thanks for your interest in serving in the Arts Council. We appreciate that. So
thank you. So I moved to Daybreak in South Jordan a year ago, and I'm a retired teacher, and I love the arts. I have an online boutique with local artists in it, and then we also do workshops locally with myself as an artist and my other friend artists at local venues in South Jordan. And then at the Art Swap, the Gala Art Swap, Jason Neiman said that there was a few openings for the Art Council for South Jordan, so I was like, expand my involvement and my volunteering, and I just love to facilitate the arts and get them going for everybody and celebrating the arts. So that's why I want to be involved.
Very good.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're not going to go out there.
Yeah. No, it's like, they're stuck with me for now, I guess.
My name is Lucas Milhouse. I've been in South Jordan for 2 years. I'm a filmmaker and videographer, and I'm a former theater kid, so I'm
awesome.
You can't get it out of your blood. So
I can relate to that.
So I wanted to be part of the Arts Council because I want to see the theater grow a little bit. I only saw one production a year. There should probably be three a year. So I was hoping to amplify that and just get more involved in what's going on in South Jordan, because I don't really know exactly what's going on.
Yeah.
And we have four kids, so it'd be an opportunity for them to be able to, well, for me to be able to amplify those opportunities for people in their age range also. So, yeah, that's what I bring to the table.
Very good.
Great.
I also have five kids. Great.
I mean, I have six kids.
Well, thank you. I love people that come from different backgrounds and have your areas of emphasis. And that's always what we're looking for on our Arts Council is diverse backgrounds in different. The arts is so comprehensive, right? It can cover so much, and there's not one that's more important than the other. We think that everyone has something that they embrace and relate to, whatever. It's important that we represent each of them.
Yeah.
Bring those strengths to our Arts Council. So I'm going to turn to the council and see if anybody has any questions for
either. Sarah, did you have a specific art medium? I caught that you had an online art boutique, but are you a painter or like any specific background area?
So when I did arts integration, it was all areas of art, but what I've done recently is mostly watercolor and acrylic painting.
So arts integration, is that what you taught then?
Yeah. Well, I was a science teacher that did arts integration, AP biology and AP environment.
Oh, okay.
So at the high school level, I was at an arts charter. And so I taught how to do art at a high level and videography and dance and theater and music, and we integrated it all in our science learning.
Okay. Sounds like we need you to come and teach us a few things.
Very cool.
I have a question, Mayor.
Go ahead.
I'm just curious. I always love to see the talent on our committees spread out. So what part of the cities are each of you in? Like,
I'm in Daybrook Founders Village.
Okay.
And I'm off Bangor 98.
Great.
There you go.
Love
Very
it.
Good.
That's good. Anyone have any other questions?
No.
Okay. Well, just to let you know how this works, at the end of the night tonight, once we're all the way done with tonight, we get together and we chat and we go through all the applications and things like that, and then you'll hear back from us, and then we put Arts Council, we have to see what openings we have as well, you know, who has openings. We each have a couple of, spots that we fill. We filled quite a few recently, and so we also have to figure out who has openings and where they're at and whatever. And then you'll hear back from us soon. Really soon. Like probably now. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Cool. Okay.
Great.
Well, nice to
okay.
meet you.
Thank you so much for coming.
Thank
we appreciate
you.
It. You know, you said you wondered what's going on in South Jordan. I can tell you I appreciate that question. And there is a lot of great things happening in South Jordan. There's a lot of good things, and we're really putting an emphasis on the arts in this city. So
I'm excited
more
to get
shows
involved, yeah.
is a great idea. We need better venues to do more shows. It's all
yes.
part of a holistic, comprehensive effort.
That's initially what I was searching for, is like where are the theater venues? And I figured that the community theater, somebody broke off from the community theater and went up towards Mountain View and found a theater up there at a middle
well, they
school.
They actually built it. They created it.
Oh, okay.
They built
yeah,
it
they
themselves.
Built,
yeah.
Yeah.
Are you talking
yeah,
about
the
Light Academy?
Yeah.
They built that.
But there's nothing too central that...
Because right now with our city, we just are hosting them at the community center, like just down
on
the street.
Redwood.
Yeah.
Redwood, yeah. And they only fit about 200. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
And we're working with the county, partnering with the county just for informational purposes, yeah. This year is a year, I don't know if either of you came, are you new to Utah or just new to South Jordan?
New to South Jordan myself.
I'm both.
Okay. So we have, there's something that Salt Lake County voters get to decide every 10 years. It's a tax. They get to choose if they want to impose on themselves or not. It's a very nominal tax, but it supports the arts all across the county. And for the last 30 years, it's always been passed by high margins, 77% last time. So this is a Zap Tax year.
Okay.
And we rely on the Zap Tax quite a bit to be able to do some of these projects.
We got $23,000 last year from Zap. I mean, hopefully get a little
plus
bit more.
It helped fund the construction of our park, our
big
regional park that we put lots of things.
Yeah.
So anyway, just for informational purposes, as we're looking at venues and opportunities to do more things like that, we'll see what the voters of Salt Lake County say this year. But the Zap Tax has been very popular because all of the communities benefit from it. So we'll see.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Right. Okay, we are thrilled. It says on our agenda, Don Willie, but we are thrilled to have Alan Matheson here from the Point of the Mountain State Land Authority. Alan is the executive director at the Point. He's our, he's the guy. Alan is amazing. In fact, I'm going to take an ounce of personal privilege and embarrass him a little bit because you can't actually let this news out too far in advance. But Thursday, Alan is receiving a significant award as CEO of the Year. And it's a unique CEO role because he's the executive director of the Point, well deserving of CEO of the Year. So I get the privilege of being there at that lunch when he's honored on Thursday, and he deserves it. We appreciate Alan's work and look forward to his update about the great things happening at the Point.
Thanks so much, Mayor, and thanks to all of you. I appreciate the opportunity to be here, and I'm always impressed with the good things happening in South Jordan. You're talking about art here. We had a meeting this afternoon with a group that we've engaged to help develop an arts master plan for the Point. We just think it's critical for creating a sense of place, community, distinct from other places, and stimulate some conversation and thought. I'm not going to take a lot of time and go over ground that we've covered in the past. I want to give you a little update on what happened with demolition and where we are in phase one and some of the next steps you'll see, but mostly save some time for conversation and any questions you have. So if you've been by the site, you know that the demolition has largely taken place. I think it's worth noting that 76% of the materials on the site were recycled.
That's good.
Metal,
that's
good. Concrete, asphalt, etc. And that saved about 8,000 heavy truck trips off of the site, which has an impact, of course, on roads and air quality, noise, etc. All of the concrete on the site has been crushed and is in mounds on the site. It'll be used again for road base and other purposes. But wanted to start from the beginning with a commitment to sustainability. So the next step is to get going with phase one. And we're actively working on infrastructure. The construction drawings are underway. We go out to bid on a couple of the pieces, including water and some of the roads in the next week or so. But you'll see more activity on site now as the infrastructure starts going on. In November, we signed our development agreement with our phase one master development partners. This is Lincoln, Clemena, and Wadsworth have national and local experience. I think what's important is this is an agreement that took some time to develop because we wanted to make sure that it set very high standards for the developers and protected the people of the state. And we believe that it does that, and it's about 500 pages or something. The reporter got it, said it took him 3 days to read through it. But the key points are, I think, really setting the bar pretty high. Phase one is going to be in the middle of the project, which is unusual for a development, but we think that we need to create the placemaking that will attract the kinds of companies and opportunities we need at the site. More than just showing some renderings, we want to be able to show delivery of the project. So phase one, about 100 acres, 3,300 multifamily units, including affordable units, jobs, hotel, entertainment, retail, etc. This just gives you a little idea of what the massing might look like. A couple of the features that I'll point out. You've got a central green here, which would be a place for some activities, a river to range trail that would connect the Jordan River Parkway to the regional trails east of I-15. This is the promenade in the middle, which is kind of a top-level shopping area with retail on the bottom, residential, commercial above. And this is what we call Convergence Hall, which will be the first piece of the Innovation District at the site. So I'm just going to talk through those really quickly. Again, housing's on everybody's minds these days. We need to have a wide range of housing that meets the needs of people from different income levels, different life stages. So there will be, a divergence of product there. In terms of transportation, we're working with UDOT on connections to I-15. There will be a number of new connections there, some going over I-15 to connect to the Draper. 146 South is going to be upgraded. Front Runner Station at the site to connect to the region. Transit going through the site and more. So we've really talked about this as an innovation community, the idea that we can generate some ideas in Utah, commercialize those ideas, and solve problems. We think the first building at the site is going to be what we call a convergence hall. That's been programmed, and expect the Utah System of Higher Education to go out to bid with architects in the next couple of weeks. It'll be a place where there's an innovation fund the legislature's created. It's got $30 million in it right now to take ideas from our institutions of higher learning to commercialization. These are just some renderings, give you a little sense for the promenade and what it might look like. It's based loosely on Santana Row in San Jose. Some of us went and visited it a few months ago. Maybe the most valuable property in San Jose. This gives you a view of kind of a food hall area that ties our promenade to the River Derange Trail. The view that this is a view of the River Derange Trail, which will have a water management function as well as recreation and active transportation. So people will be able to ride bikes from South Jordan along the Porter Rock, the Jordan River Trail, and into and out of the site. In talking about transportation, one of the things that I should mention is we're big fans of the idea of east-west transit, connecting the Red Line all the way through, and just think that that would be a game changer for this part of the valley. And so our board has voted to advance that idea, work with entities in the area, communities, as well as WFRC.
In fact, if I can interject, the Point Board made a formal resolution of support.
That's right.
For extending the Red Line from South Jordan to connect to the Point.
Great.
May I ask, do we have the land? Does the state have the land where that will go?
The right of way.
Some of
the right of way.
They have some of the right of way. Not all of it, but there's some right of way that's been preserved for a long time.
Yeah, there's much that needs to happen, I think, coming to consensus on what the right of way is, where it's going, et cetera. But we've tried to, as we plan at our site, try to make sure there are opportunities for transit to come through there.
And if I could, with that, is the river to range going to be adjacent to that on that same parcel that you're going to get the right-of-way on, or is it going to be completely separate? So you're not riding your bike next to the tracks, or?
No, we think it'll be separate. So just, here's the river to range. This is the existing transit right-of-way. Goes along the outside of phase one. Mm-hmm. So they will be separated. Okay. This will then go over I-15, separated but close. And so you can access it pretty easily from the River mm-hmm. Range Trail.
Okay, good. But you're not like next to
don't
the
train. Don't want
to be next to a train. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Okay,
but
thank you.
I think I appreciate that point, Alan, because I think that is important, a key thing that's important for us, and having the point board make that formal resolution and statement and a commitment to a shared priority there is important for us. So I just want to point that out.
Critical. And I was in a meeting last week with folks from Larry H. Miller, and of course working on Daybreak, and we're trying to partner on making some of those connections. People can live and work in the various sites and still get back and forth. This is the chapel, the only thing you see on the site when you go by now, so it'll be part of a park, preserved. Don't know what it's going to be yet. So if any of you want to buy a chapel, you just...
Well, we had a lady present in the board meeting today about putting this on the National Registry,
right,
and that it can get some tax credits. So if you want to buy it and put it on the National Registry, you can get some tax credits
How
for it.
How old is that building?
This was built in, I think, the early 60s.
Okay.
And it looks lonely when you go by. See that lone building out there?
That's
but we think that it really conveys an important message. Drawing on the history of people who were in very difficult circumstances, finding some hope on the site, and think that it really signals this transformation, this idea that you can go from a place of constraint, discouragement, to a place of growth and opportunity. And the central green area, that's the Convergence Hall, the Innovation District, where there will be lab space, maker space, offices, residences for post-grad students from around the world that can come together. So things are moving ahead. There's been a lot happening behind the scenes. I think we're all anxious to say, having gone from public outreach and planning and market analysis and engineering and all of this, we're anxious to see things growing and coming out of the ground and making a difference for us in this broader southern portion of the valley. And want to work closely with you and understand any thoughts or concerns you have as we continue our work. Thanks.
Thank you. Does anybody have any questions for Al? No?
You're not going to make it easy on me. I'm okay with that.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate you.
Appreciate
Thanks.
It.
All right. A lot of exciting things happening around our whole region. And I think for us, this point project, anytime somebody says, do you feel like that's in competition with what you're doing in South Jordan? No, they're very synergistic. We are bringing a whole new level of life to this part of the valley and economic development, right? And it's investment. There's a lot, private investment. It's a good thing. And the synergy is we're not right next to each other, and we need to be able to move people to and from. So having their support joining us in our desire to extend the red line is significant. So, all right, item F. We have Mr. Stephen Schaefermeyer here to talk to us about an application that we have on a housing development. So we'll turn it over to you, Stephen.
I'll rely on them to go through their presentation, just to give you a little bit of context. This is another planned development floating zone project. It's on property that's roughly at Jordan Gateway, just west of Jordan Gateway, and almost 9800 South. The property does lie within a station area plan area for the Front Runner station. So if you'll recall, we made a change to the PD floating zone to require developments to stay under 8 units per acre, except within a station area planning area. Station area plan, it's weird, area. So this property falls within it. That state law could allow a developer to sort of force the city into planning exercise that could take a year. And we've talked that that's probably not necessary because we have the tools. outside of station area planning to build some housing in this area. So that's what they're going to present to you today. We will be bringing, hopefully, back to you an actual station area plan. We want to start it this year. It needs to be done before the end of 2025. So because this area is sort of the last, or because it's mostly built out with a few exceptions, this being the largest exception, once this property gets developed, there's not a whole lot of land left, and we don't anticipate a lot of redevelopment in the station area plan. So that's kind of the broader context for the application that they're bringing in. They'll go over the lay of the land literally as it goes, drops towards the Jordan River.
Yeah.
During our last general plan, the area was designated as agricultural preservation because of the landowner that owned all of the property. That landowner now does not own all of the property. So part of this application would be a request to change the land use from agricultural preservation. From the standpoint of station area planning, it makes sense. That was not a requirement when we had the general plan. Had it been a requirement, we probably would have looked at a different land use for this property. So it would be both the land use change, plan development, rezone with the development agreement to provide some flexibility. We meet with developers to try to get it to a point where we need your involvement and your opinions and your influence on it before we take it through the actual public hearing process. We are at that stage.
Hey, Stephen.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
How far from the station? It's a radius, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
How far is
it? It's a half mile.
Half mile.
Right?
Yep. And I've got a slide that kind of shows the aerial, what that looks like.
Got a little ahead there. Sorry.
So is this the property where they've been filling in the land?
Next to that property. So that property used to be one. I won't go into the whole history because I don't know the whole history.
Well,
and tried
to
stay out of the whole history.
So.
Yeah, and we have to be done. Through a court case, the family has now divided that east-west. So
you're south of Altagrande.
Yeah, so the party that's doing the...
Or north, I'm sorry. North.
Yeah, the people that are bringing in all the dirt that own that piece of property, they are not a part of this application.
Good question.
Now I know where we're talking.
Right, yeah, that's the day people like.
So who's the owner currently of the land? Do you own it?
It's a family member. We're under contract to purchase it. We're working with the current owners.
Your family member, or you're buying it from a family
member? We're buying it from a family member of the prior owner.
So you're under contract.
Members.
You're pending
yes.
closing on what we all decide here.
Sure, yep.
Okay.
Yeah, we're
yes.
working with
that. Got it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay.
All right.
I'll dive into it.
Yeah, please.
I appreciate Stephen's introduction. I'll just add, if there's things that look good with this project, it's because of staff. And if there's something we need to fix, we'll take the arrows on that one. So
good,
we appreciate planning and engineering. It is a tricky site. We've been working with them quite a bit to come up with something that we feel and they feel is presentable to you here tonight. So my name is Chase Andreese. I work with DAI. We're happy to be here tonight. We love working with the city of West Jordan. We've got a project.
South Jordan.
I'm sorry.
You
want to
walk out?
I know. I should just. I'm off to a
turn
hot
in a
start.
Circle and come back.
We had another project in West Jordan that was recently on my mind. I apologize. South Jordan. I do know where I am tonight. We've got a long history with the city, and we're glad to be back here tonight. So
yeah. Before you get going, you were before us for a different project.
Yes.
What project was that?
That was the Rise.
The
Rise behind. River Park.
Yeah, I know. The
okay.
Rise.
I was thinking the same thing.
It's just like, yeah, you look familiar,
familiar
but I can't figure out
so
which project.
So are you working for a different developer now, or is that your
same?
Same
developer.
Group.
Yeah.
Okay, DAI.
DAI, correct.
Did the Rise.
Correct.
And now this one.
Correct.
Okay, thanks for that clarification. Yeah.
So this is just a slide showing you, again, where this site is located. It is behind, just to the north and west of Ultradent. It does have two accesses, one off of Ultradent and then the other off of a private drive that's just north of that Social Security building.
Oh, cool.
So it does have pretty good access to Jordan Gateway. And this is that radius that we were just talking about that's a half mile from the Front Runner station. So there is just that little corner that's outside of it, but for all intents and purposes, the developable area is within that half mile radius. And that kind of gives you an idea of what that encompasses to
Stephen's point, this is kind of, as we see it, also some of the last developable land within that station area. This is the layout that we have been working through with the staff. It involves 186 units. I won't go into the details. I have some other slides that show what each one of those colors depict, some different front load, rear load townhomes, some three stories, some two stories. Some have basements. We're trying to offer a wider range of units, anywhere from 1,400 square feet up to 2,000 square feet. The density is about 10.06 units per acre. The total site, including the area down near the river. So this, you have some floodplain that comes through here. This area is about 5 acres. So the developable area is closer to 13, the overall site being about 18 and a half acres.
What is the light green? Is that the floodplain area?
So this area, this doesn't depict the floodplain. I don't have an exhibit showing that, but we've worked with engineering to kind of dial that in, and it's part of the process that we're working through for sure with the staff. But this is an area, obviously, that has some natural features that we're preserving, right? We're trying to maintain some of that natural wetland area. This is depicted in blue, but that doesn't mean that there's water there. There's, you know, that wetland feel that you have along the river. You see that here in certain areas along the Jordan River. And obviously, we're trying to preserve that. We've got a detention basin that we can put to use for some public or private open space. Some other area, we've listed it just as potential. One of the things we'd like to work with the city on is finding a way to put that to use. One of the things we are really excited about is a trail connection that I believe is on the city's open space master plan.
Transportation master plan.
The transportation master plan from this area over to the Jordan River Trail. So the city has an existing bridge that we went down and just took a snapshot of. We worked with this contractor to get an idea of what that would look like. Can we do the same thing here? We've worked with the engineering department, with the planning departments to find a way to work that into this project, to not only have some connectivity within the project up to Jordan Gateway, but also a bridge accessing to the west.
And I'll just make a note on that. One of our challenges is there's a lot of distance between 98th and South Jordan Parkway. And the majority of land, all of the land that's open, that's south of this, is owned by the U.S. government or has some other conservation easement. And so gaining access to any of that has been impossible. And we've always felt like it would be a wonderful opportunity at some point to find some sort of crossing. And then it makes the goal of, and this is something that will be addressed in the station area planning, the goal of connecting the station to different amenities, the largest being the Jordan River possible. And so this was one of the first things that came up in staff discussions, is how do we connect this more fully to the amenities in the area.
So the green area, is that just going to be the natural landscaping?
That's kind of how we're trying to preserve it. Obviously, that's one of the things we can work on through this process of what that looks like. You know, are there other things that we can put in here? With the rise, if you recall, we made a donation to the city for some off-site pickleball courts, right? It didn't make sense to put them on the site, but we were able to collaborate and find a way to do that. So that's obviously one of the things we're trying to accomplish with the bridge, is to say, you know, is there a value add that we can include as part of this development? And that's one of the things we're definitely excited for.
And then you're going to allow the public to be able to use this space.
Yeah, this next exhibit shows the connectivity through the site. And this is a 10-foot trail, again, that would come down to the bridge, cross the river, go to the Jordan River Trail. And that 10-foot trail comes not only through the project, but would tie in up to Jordan Gateway.
Is that a separate trail or just sidewalk?
This would be a separate trail. The darker color that you see here is a 5-foot sidewalk.
Okay.
Yep.
Let me ask a question.
Yes, go ahead.
If you'd go back one slide. So that concept bridge,
Stephen,
mm-hmm.
on 114th, where we do a lot of the Sojo races,
mm-hmm.
you cross underneath 114th Bridge, and then there's a walking trail that goes across Jordan River.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the same
concept?
That's
kind of the same
that's
concept.
The pic- that's where we
that's
took
your
that picture.
Picture.
Yeah, I should
okay,
have clarified
so same
that.
Style.
Same style.
Would be repeated.
Correct.
And then from here, would you explain somebody, where's Mulligan's from here? Obviously it's south.
Across
how far south?
Quite,
no,
quite a way.
It's just,
yeah. So if I go back here.
Oh, there we go.
So here,
you.
Yeah, here's our site. Here's Mulligan's.
The very northeast corner.
So not that far.
Not that far.
Once they get on that trail, they can easily get to Mulligan's.
Yeah.
Yeah. But see, from 98th, again, the challenge, from 98th, you have to go pretty far west to get on the trail, and then it sort of heads east again. You can kind of see that curve.
Mm-hmm.
So we think that that would really make that
right.
much more functional.
Yeah, because once you go under 106, you're committed all the way.
Yep.
Is it 114th that's your next?
Yep.
114th is the next crossing.
Where's Mystic Springs going to be?
No.
It is up by the where it says altitude. It's kind of in that area.
And are we going to put a boat ramp there? A Mystic Springs?
There is a boat ramp there. Yeah, they've already installed a boat ramp.
Oh, it's done.
We need to do a ground
in and out canoes, kayaks.
That little parking lot off 98 is Mystic Springs, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just south of that.
Yeah, yeah, just adjacent. When did we put a boat ramp in there?
It's not last year.
I'll be thinking of that. You can back a truck down with a boat on a
trailer. No, let's do that.
This is like pull your kayak.
Good. Oh. All right.
And it hasn't eroded away this year.
Does that answer that question?
Yeah, thank you. I just wanted to know where I was. Yeah. Thank you.
So I won't spend too much more time on this one. Again, this is just showing the connectivity within the site and how the trail, that 10-foot trail, is incorporated into the project. You'll notice here, we've kind of stubbed it to the north. We recognize that's a different project owner, different development.
Sensitive.
It's sensitive. So, you know, we're not blazing trails through there, but we're obviously cognizant that there's good planning.
Connectivity may need to happen someday.
There's good planning that can
be
done right now.
If it ever develops, it'd be nice to get this road connected to them.
Yeah. So there's two of those, one here and one here on the site that point north.
Are the units owner-occupied, or is it rental like Rise?
So our proposal right now is to do them for rent. We've planned this in such a way to provide, obviously, those certain amenities. One of the things that we look at as well as we plan a for-rent project is parking. As you look at this exhibit, it's really busy. But what the story is being told here is that we've got 4.3 parking stalls per unit. So every unit within the development has a two-car garage, and all but these 15 units will have a two-car driveway as well. With those units that don't have a driveway, we plan off-street parking near those so that there's a place for those cars to get off of the road. And really, we generally overpark in terms of what the city's requirements are. Most places where we develop, we try to include additional parking above and beyond that demand so that you don't see those stresses on the community, like having a you know, cars parked all the way down a 35-foot right of way.
So can you say again, what percent of these have a two-car driveway?
All of them. So 171 have a two-car driveway.
Thank you.
This is just a fencing exhibit. We have been working through this with planning. It's probably high level preliminary for this stage of the council. But obviously we're trying to buffer some of this use to the east of us, and then obviously an incompatible use under the city's code to the north. So we've got some precast fence there. But then with some of this more natural open space that exists to the south, to the north, we proposed like a post-rail fence, something of that nature. Obviously, this is a detail that we would work through, have addressed in the development agreement.
Technically, under our code, we had this discussion with Rise, right? Technically, under our code, they'd have to fence all of it with precast. However, because the south side is...
I'm going to ask if we... You guys, there's so much chatter going on. That's almost all we can hear. Sorry. Thank you. Go ahead.
Yeah. South of here is all that protected open space. so it won't be developed. The point of the ordinance is to sort of protect, you know, these incompatible uses, but it doesn't make sense to fence off open space in my mind. So that's why we went down this road with this idea. And then, of course, on the north, because it's floodplain, it's floodplain on the other side as well. And so it doesn't make sense to stick up a wall. And I think it would aesthetically look funny to have a precast wall go all the way down to the Jordan River. Yeah. So.
I'm not sure you could do that.
Right, with the floodplain even. That's true. Anyway.
So I've included just a few exhibits kind of showing what the elevations would look like here. Because of the topography, which you don't get that feel. A lot of you know where the site is and some of the unique topography that exists out there. There's, I know, an apartment building that's just south of here that's got that sheer wall that holds the rest of the building up. This site's kind of unique because it does slope off, but it also has some natural tiers that really these buildings are positioned on. And so we've designed some three-story units that look up and over and kind of preserve some of those natural views. For some of those that are on the back of the slope, there's what we call a tuck-under unit. So there's the garage on the third floor below, and then there's the living spaces above. Some of the front-loaded townhome product. And then again, just the site for discussion purposes. But again, we're grateful for the city's efforts, the staff's efforts in getting us to this point with this product. We know that this is a, you know, for rent is also something we know is going to be a discussion point. As we look at this, as we've kind of explored some of the other residential development along Jordan Gateway within the station area plan, we think that what we're offering with, you know, a townhome for rent product at 10 units an acre is something that really the market is missing within this area. If, as you go south, I have an exhibit. I didn't put this in the packet. I kind of just slapped this together last minute, looking at a little bit what type of development exists along Jordan Gateway. I know that's the Jordan Station Apartments to the south of us, at about 50 units an acre. Just to the north of us, you've got the San Marino Apartments at about 23 units an acre. Southridge Townhomes off of Jordan Gateway, that's just to the south of 106. And the density isn't what I'm focusing on. I think what I'm trying to get at is there's a lot of apartments for rent. We know that there aren't a lot of townhomes for rent in this area. We think that this is something that South Jordan would benefit from, and hopefully we can work together with you to make that something nice for your city. Any questions for me?
If I can be candid, and I'm not trying to be disrespectful, how would South Jordan benefit from these being rentals instead of owner-occupied?
You know, I think there are people that are looking to rent. You know, I know you and I have had conversations about the rise. I know that you're in real estate. Mm-hmm. There's a need for housing, definitely.
100%, we all agree.
There's a need for housing. And there are a variety of ways to solve that issue. Providing housing, whether it's for rent or for sale, I believe helps that. But there are also people who are looking to rent, not just those who are forced to rent because of the lack of available housing, but I believe there are people that are looking just to rent, mm-hmm. who are looking to rent not an apartment, and something less than a home, mm-hmm. whether that's for 12 months, whether that's for 10 years, it varies. But this is something that we've done in a number of other cities and found that there are a lot of people who are looking to rent, who want to live in your city, who still have something to offer, even though they may just be classified as renters and not homeowners.
I have no problem with people being renters. That's not my point. My point is if someone's going to spend, this is my personal philosophy.
Sure.
If someone's going to spend the amount of money they'd pay to do your rent, I personally, Tamara's personal opinion is that amount of money put towards a mortgage then gives that person some ownership. And they're on a pathway now to personal wealth, personal ownership, personal gain, instead of a landlord getting all the gain. And that's common knowledge, right?
Sure.
So I personally am not in favor of this being a rental. I'd much rather see it be owner occupied. And so that's why I'm asking, is I believe in home ownership deeply, because I believe that every person deserves that opportunity to own property. And that's a pathway to success for sure. So I'd much rather see this go to owner occupied. Can you guys flip the switch and make a change? What are you up to on open to that concept?
I mean, we're always open to discussing what that looks like, right? And I'm not the one to make that decision today, right? There are obviously a number of other partners who are involved in looking at this and figuring out, you know, what makes sense for this site given what's being proposed here. But obviously, I mean, it's noted. And we knew coming in that this would be something that would come up.
And I don't think that's just my opinion, but
for sure.
Everything is
for sure. And you know, I will say we're trying to do this the right way. We're not trying to hide the ball and say we're going to do one thing and then pull it fast. We're trying to be forthright and say, you know, this is something that we have planned for this particular area.
Sure.
We think it makes sense from our market study, our analysis. And to your point, we're also home builders. We build homes for sale in other areas.
Yeah.
As we looked at this one, it didn't make sense from our perspective, but there's another perspective in the room, and we're trying to find a way to make that work.
Chase, you're always good to work with us, and we appreciate the conversation and the thoroughness of working with staff and bringing projects that are thoughtfully, you know, put together and mindful. The other perspective that has to be addressed in this room is the 500 hours I've spent in meetings with legislators over the last year and the governor's office, who have said, the problem is we don't have for sale. Cities have taken heat for approving projects like the RISE project that are all rental. Heat, actual heat, like that comes down in the form of legislation.
Sure.
Taking away our zoning because we're not zoning for homes that are for sale. And you've heard, I'm sure, you know, that the legislature's been very forthcoming this year, and the governor, with their expectation that for sale product is what needs to happen. It's the missing middle. We have so many rentals that have been built that people can't buy something like this that they could buy as a first home. And that opinion, the narrative, whatever you want to call it, the legislature is not likely to change anytime soon until we further move the needle. In fact, what's commonly said the most is that all of the rentals haven't actually helped us move the needle on the housing because people aren't buying it, or kids. The Senate president's really vocal about that. And I don't disagree with them. I don't disagree with them, and I've been in those meetings. So I just wanted to point that out, because it's not just South Jordan that has a concern over the complete rental here. And you're not the only one coming to us with things like that. Almost the only thing we're getting anymore.
Yeah.
And that's not sustainable for our community. And the state is realizing it's not sustainable for our state and for our future. And so I think that's why we have pretty strong feelings about that. A whole community of all rental-only townhomes, in addition to everything else, isn't the direction that we can take the city. And it's also something that's under such scrutiny that I think we'd be at risk if we even did, to be honest. So,
well, I agree. I think home ownership, the people are actually buying into our community, and they have skin in the game.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas a rental, you know, they're here and then they're gone, and they're not making a commitment to South Jordan.
Yeah.
And I think that that's really important to have a good, strong base of people who are invested in our community.
The different developments that are around there that you kind of touched on, that we know exist here and there all around the area, are all for rent.
Right.
There isn't anywhere right there that you can buy. And you know, my perspective is I think there's a market of people who would snatch those up and buy them. I have kids that can't afford to live in South Jordan. They can't afford to live in Utah.
Mm-hmm.
Something like this, if they could buy it, they could buy.
Sure.
And they could live here. And so I think that missing middle market, I've just spent way too much time in these meetings and hearing, I know how the legislature feels about this.
Sure.
I know how the governor feels about this. And I marvel sometimes at almost punitive responses for cities who are approving these anymore, because the narrative is shifting to, you know, you've got to have not just any housing, but it's got to be for sale. So just know that is really resonating with me, because that's what we just barely finished the session, right? It is live, and it is fresh, and it is real. So that's a perspective that I just wanted to share, because that the for rent only perspective for developments has changed. Maybe not necessarily for, you know, developers and for bottom lines and for different things, but in Utah, that is not only not the priority, but it is frowned on. So I just wanted to bring that up.
I appreciate the candor. We knew that this would be a discussion, and it would be a talking point that we would have to address with you. You know, and as you've mentioned this, Mayor, I'm just thinking of, I think it's Senator Fillmore's bill, the affordable housing bill that just went into place, right? And thinking of some of the things that are in that bill, and you know, we'd love to explore some of those provisions and how they might apply to this project, and looking at that with the city and knowing this is where we're at now, right? We'd love to keep the conversation going and move forward with you. So
you mentioned that you examined it and felt like you couldn't build for sale here, and I'm curious, what are the hurdles to building for sale here?
You know, I don't think it's that we couldn't build for sale. It's not something that we are currently doing. I know that there are other people that would probably gobble this up in a heartbeat and build it for sale. I do know, and we don't have to get into the details on this, but the financing is totally different on a for rent project. You're able to put a little more into it, provide more amenities. You know, there's an HOA that's managing everything from parking to open space to these private amenities that we feel can be done to a little bit higher degree when it's owned and managed by one entity.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it offers a little bit more of a higher, you know, rent unit than what you might see if these were all for sale and you had individual owners who were occupying them or even renting them out to kids or third parties. And that's not true across the board. I'm not trying to generalize what townhome communities look like. I'm saying our experience has been,
there's still an HOA
when we're able to control it. Right. When it's under common ownership and we're the ones that are managing everything, we found that we're able to turn those screws a little bit more tighter.
I don't know. There's some real Nazis in some of those.
There are. Yeah, no, I used to work for a city, and most of the calls we got were, "How's the HOA president?" So, and again, I wasn't trying to generalize. I'm saying it's been our experience that we're able to keep that standard a little bit higher when we are involved.
Anybody have any other questions?
Think down at the end.
Please.
A comment, you know, and I appreciate you taking time. And by the way, thanks for meeting with me ahead of time and kind of going through this stuff. So that's been really helpful. You know, I think one thing that I always like to do is I just want to make sure that we're, you know, we're fair. You know, and you see all these rentals around you, and it's like, okay, well, you know, if we've got these other rentals, isn't it fair just to give it to you? And I kind of look back at, you know, we just right over in River Park, you know, gave you, that's all rentals right there that we gave you guys. And so, you know, so we have, you know, I think we have given you something that right in that proximity. And so, I'm kind of with everyone else that, you know, gave you rentals there. We understood, you know, when you came to us and said, hey, you know, there's people who want to be in those office buildings, and for the future success of those office buildings, you know, they're going to need some executive type housing in there and we agreed to it, you know. But I think I'm with everyone else. I'd really like to see these be for sale. But.
No, again, no, we're good at taking the arrows. Like I said, Steven, all
these
the
are
good
arrows.
Things,
these are nice. And they're not. They're
all the good things are Steven's.
They're
and,
context. And,
of course.
And,
yeah.
You know, representing
yeah.
the community
guidance,
that we represent.
Right.
That's the purpose
and
of
meeting,
is for
the
direction and guidance. Yeah.
Direction that we receive from
right.
our state partners.
Right.
Let me give you a positive.
I would love it. I could go home feeling great.
Yeah, I appreciate that there's a slope to this. And that you're going to have to be creative in putting building product on the slope. I appreciate that you've left some open space. One of the things I took notes on is you said public or private open space. I think I'd like, personally, if you go back to the one that had the green and the blue on it. I think it would make sense. I mean, as I go up and down the Jordan River Parkway, I bike it and I walk it.
Yeah.
And I've gone all the way north clear to Thanksgiving Point. Sorry, that's south. Anyways, I've gone up and down this corridor multiple times. There's different sections that you're like, I'm on the Jordan River Trail and I can't move anywhere.
Yeah.
And there's other sections where you have a little more open and you feel a little more natural. I personally would like to see that look that way.
Yeah.
I don't want to see a fence where you say this is our private space, but it's like access points. So there's a piece in Draper that has these big ginormous rental units, but they can get down to the river.
Yeah.
This I think could be way better looking.
You could, and you have, if you look at the topography lines, you kind of have a natural break between
right.
the residential side and
so,
the open
so
space.
The residents are there, they're
yeah.
enjoying their views, but we all kind of combine together
right.
on the trail system. So that I'd like to see that if somebody wants to get the gateway, they can hop on that trail, go through this community,
mm-hmm.
that it's very accessible and not private, but public.
Yeah. And that's why we've left that potential amenity area there.
Yeah.
That would be a great place to work with the city to
mm-hmm.
include some public improvements.
If I could give you some more feedback.
Of course.
Are you open to it?
Of course, yeah.
I look at that little park, and I don't know what your acreage of that little green square up there is, but one of the things that I tend to say to developers a lot is pretend you have a dog or a kid or both, and where are they going to go? Because that wetland
especially
area isn't a place where you can play.
Right.
You can't walk a dog. You can't really even sit.
No, you can't go on it at all.
Right.
Yeah.
That's my point.
Yeah.
So as you go back and regroup, which we hope you do and come back, I'd like to make sure that that green space is a large enough space to accommodate 184 units, 186 units, and it's not some postage stamp that's really unusable. We've talked to developers
right.
multiple times over the last few years and said, we need more green space. We need
yeah.
a spot so it doesn't feel like you're so congested.
Right.
I hope that helps.
It does.
So
yep.
I don't have specifics, but that'll be a comment that I'll make next time you come back.
For sure.
Let's address where are the children going to be and where are the dogs going to be, because everybody's got one or the other, it seems like. That's
sure.
my...
We got both.
There you go. Yeah. Yeah. Does that make sense?
It does. Yep.
Yeah.
No, I appreciate
okay.
that.
Because if I'm in 186 units and I'm feeling like this, and that's a teeny postage stamp, not adequate.
And you're referring to the darker green area up
that,
in the
yes,
within.
Yes,
yep.
yes,
yeah.
Yeah.
Of course.
And I don't know, what is the space on that?
I don't have the acres off the top of my
head. Okay, that'll be a question for next time.
I'll have it.
Thank you.
Yep.
Anybody have any other questions? I like the look of this. I think you've done a good job. Please leave here feeling positive, just knowing we want to see them for sale. That's it. You know?
Personally, I think with the views that they'll have, it'll sell in seconds.
Oh,
it'll be a great, it's a great site.
It is a,
if you've been
right.
out there or have the opportunity to go out there, it's pretty cool. Some of those kind of natural ledges
yeah.
that you'll
and
just be able
view
to.
View of the Jordan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just think it wouldn't be a problem at all.
It would
yeah.
be a great site.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Council.
Appreciate it. Thanks.
Thanks, Steve.
Thank you. Okay. What?
Okay. We're doing good. Did you misread the clock for me?
I did. There? And I was like, how in the world are we this late? Okay, good. That was stressing out. We are doing great. Okay.
Coming late today.
We are going to turn to Stephen and Jen, and we're going to have a conversation about ADUs.
I made my own.
Yeah, if you'll take one of both. So if you'll recall, our last conversation about affordable housing, I said we were going to hold off on accessory dwellings and talk about those today. So our affordable housing plan requires us to do something to address ADUs. When the state law was passed requiring communities to allow internal accessory dwelling units in primarily residential zone areas, South Jordan basically already complied. We didn't have to do a whole lot. We've had to make some tweaks with parking requirements and those sorts of things. But internal accessory dwelling units were already allowed throughout the majority of our single family zones. Not our mixed use zones, our single family zones. So one area that we've noticed recently and within the past couple of years is more questions about detached accessory dwelling units. Detached units are not subject to state law. So communities are not required to allow detached units. Detached units from day one have been allowed in Daybreak. So they exist in Daybreak. Detached units have been allowed within a couple zones in the city, and we'll get to that. So I'm hoping to run quickly through this draft and get your reaction. If it's positive, we move forward. If it's not, we figure out how to tweak it. Yeah.
Just ask clarification.
Just so, I mean, I know the legislature talks, but so the most recent thing is, you know, that they detach is not being mandated by the state.
Correct.
Yeah, okay. So, but at some point, that was part of the conversation, right? That it potentially could be, or
I mean,
I'm sure it was, but
it's been mentioned.
It comes up in general, and what they're really looking for. The next step I see them pushing in ADU world is not detached to the primary dwelling on the unit. It would be more like, can you do ADUs above a garage on a town home where the garage is detached from the central town home? There's a number of builders pushing that sort of thing. I know Ivory has a product, Gar Horton has a product, things like that. And so the garage is not attached to the town home. There's a little courtyard in between, but the ADU is above it. And we've had that presented to us as staff before. So.
Mm-hmm.
So I've seen that as detached, but just an overall to allow like a guest house in the backyard or something on as a carte blanche across the state, there hasn't been much talk of that. It comes up, but not.
It just comes up, okay. So nothing in here is as a result of any legislation that we're talking about. This just cleaning.
Right. So I sent a couple weeks ago two different things. One is state code, which we can run through in a broader discussion. After hopefully we can get through this draft, which only changes or proposes to change the detached regulations.
Yes.
And so hopefully that'll give you a little more context. So if you'll look at the draft that I sent, the strikeouts are because the legislature made changes that said cities can no longer regulate connectivity in the house.
Oh, yeah.
So when we, all along, when before the legislature made some changes, I've told the planners, the building department, others, we focus on the physical structure. The legislature has sort of flipped the script. I don't want to get into who lives, who's related to who. I don't want to get into people's intentions. I just want to know, when we see a building permit, does it meet some really objective standards? It's gotten a lot harder to have objective standards. One of those objective standards that we had was we want to see if there's a physical barrier. That's a different situation than a finished basement with a second kitchen, right? That's something that clearly people who don't live in the primary unit are renting it out or could rent it out to someone else. So that's where we focus. The legislature's told us, nope, you can't focus on that anymore. So that's why there's that strikeout. So that's just some cleanup.
So you no longer have to have interior connectivity then.
Separation.
Yeah, and we can get into that a little bit in the second part of this discussion. And I'll try to highlight that so it makes more sense. But now turning to the next page, in our city code, we've defined accessory dwelling unit as either internal or detached. And currently, if you have property that it's at least 14,520 square feet, so a third acre, if you have at least a third acre in the A5 or on page
2A.
Thank you. Sorry. Yeah, it's that blue strikeout. If you're in the A5, A1, or R18 zones, then you are allowed a guest house as long as you meet all the other requirements. So you're allowed a detached accessory dwelling unit as long as you meet all those other requirements.
Can I ask a question just to clarify in my brain? This is our city code.
Mm-hmm.
This is our state code.
Mm-hmm.
How does Daybreak apply? Are they in a separate compartment on their own? Do they live by this? Do they not? Just help me clarify.
This
that
does not apply to Daybreak.
Okay.
It lists the zones that it applies to, and it does not
None
apply
of them
to Daybreak.
Are mixed use.
It does not apply to the PC zone.
PC.
And I think that's important.
Mm-hmm.
Daybreak may be the only development that's in the PC zone, but that doesn't mean it will always be that way. And we regulate based on zone, not on development, except for when there's a development agreement, which is the case of Daybreak,
right,
where there's a development agreement. So we're both regulating them by the zone, which this doesn't apply to,
okay,
and by the agreement.
So currently Daybreak is PC zone.
Mm-hmm.
Unless that changes, they get to regulate ADUs. We have no.
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 The zone and the development agreement regulate ADUs.
Okay.
What they can and can't do is in the development agreement.
And we're not
going
to talk about that tonight?
We will.
Okay.
We will.
So
I want to. This
okay.
is something that I think is actionable and will and could move the needle and certainly helps us out with our affordable housing reporting because it's a commitment that we've made. So
is this one of the things on the
mm-hmm.
list?
Yeah.
And does the list specify the third acre lots?
So our list says that we will look at opportunities for expanding ADUs in the city. So this would expand detached ADUs. It's
so
not that
if
specific.
If we went to a half acre lot, it wouldn't expand or would it?
It wouldn't. So right now, again.
So the ones that are already allowed.
Yeah, so you are allowed in the A5, A1, and R18 zone a detached ADU if you have at least 14,500 square foot lot, which is the minimum lot size for the R18 zone. There's some in the A1 zone that are non-conforming that are less than an acre, and there's some in the R18 zone that are non-conforming that are less than 14,520. So those wouldn't, even though they have the right zone, they don't have the right lot size. So you'd have to be able to meet, and there's some design requirements as well, some size requirements for detached units. This change would say, instead of looking at both the zone and the minimum lot size, we just look at the minimum lot size. So within the A5, A1, R18 zones, currently you could have a detached ADU. This would allow you in the R25, R3, R4, and R5 zones to also have a detached unit if you have 14,520 square foot lot.
Okay, Stephen, give
mm-hmm.
us an idea. 14,520 square feet, I think of acres.
Third an acre.
Third, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So the likelihood that an R5 zone has a third acre lot is going to be pretty
Slim.
Rare.
Yeah.
Yeah. I recently saw an R5 zone that had some issues come up with chickens, and I think they're closer to a fourth acre. So even in that situation, it would be unlikely that they, but our R25 zones, there's a lot of third acres in the R25. And that's who we're getting calls from, is people in the R25 zone, primarily some in the R3 zone, some in the R5 zone, all wanting to do detached units. When we've looked specifically at R25, it seems to make a little more sense that you have the space, you have the frontage, you have room for parking. Now, you can choose either internal or detached. You don't get both. So all of these zones, they could do internal. All of them can't do detached currently. Under this change, as long as you have the minimum lot size of 14,520, you could choose to do internal or you could choose to do detached.
And does this include the definition of a guest house?
Yes.
Uh-huh. So a kitchen and a bathroom and whatever. Because
mm-hmm.
I just was referring back to a text I received from my daughter's friend's father
mm-hmm.
about a project that they want to do. They live over by Lifetime Fitness
mm-hmm.
in their backyard. And staff
mm-hmm.
said you don't qualify for that.
It's
R25. Yeah.
And in that neighborhood.
So I'm just connecting and going, this would actually make them eligible to do it. They've got a great big lot. They've got plenty of room to do an exterior
yes.
Unit if we allow for it. Just looking at what they have. So I just
Well, I can do it.
Yeah, yes, you could.
But you
right, but you couldn't
lot.
Do both.
So much law
right.
You couldn't have internal and detached. You still have to choose. So from an impact standpoint, the number of people living on the property, the number of cars, roughly would be the same. The only externality that you kind of have to think about is you're building an actual building in a backyard. And so, you know, if we need to look at the setback requirements and things like that, I've not gotten many complaints or that have come across my desk on things like detached ADUs, with a couple really prominent examples that are so complicated, we're not even going to talk about them.
It's historical. It has been the above garage ones for privacy, yeah, for neighbors. That's the only one that's happened, I think, 2 or 3 times in the past 15 years, 14 years. So it's not like an everyday thing.
And we've got we've got provisions in here, because that could be true for an accessory garage that doesn't have a living space. We still get complaints about privacy. So there's restrictions on placement of windows and things like that. So if you're comfortable with this, we can move it forward. Obviously, you're not approving anything. We would have the discussion with the Planning Commission. If this feels like we're opening the doors too widely, we could just add a few zones like the R25 or the R3 and not allow it across the board. But as we've looked at it, as we've talked to people, because I talked to my staff today and they said this is the question they get the most now. It's not the internal, frankly, because people think internal, it's a free-for-all at this point. Mm-hmm. So they don't even bother calling us because they've read enough in the news and they've talked to a developer or whoever, and they've been told, oh yeah, you can do it. It's the detached that now we seem to be getting a lot of calls. And we think if you have the property and you meet the requirements, why does the zone matter? Mm-hmm. The only argument against that I can think of is you're the one property in your neighborhood that can have a detached unit because you have the oddball lot. But you already have the oddball lot, exactly. So.
And you paid more for the lot.
Right.
So you have different
options. Well, the one that I was referring to, yes, they've never had one, but they've got kids preparing to go to college, and they want to have somewhere that they can live that's free, but mm-hmm. not in the house, but kind of college on their own, but in the backyard of the parents' house. So just a little unit in the backyard. Yeah. That's what they're looking for.
We currently have an issue with somebody having people live in a tough shed.
I
just have to meet the architectural standards of my house.
Yes.
So if I have a lot that's 14,500 square feet, and I want an ADU, can I come and seek a variance, or is that just like you're shut down because you're short the 14,520?
So variances are by-point legal standard, and it does go by the zone, and so likelihood is you're not going to get it.
Okay, so we're drawing a hard line, 14,520, that's it, take it or leave. I mean, you're in or you're out.
And when I say it goes by zone, one of the standards is that you're being denied a right that other people in your zone have. And so we're saying this has nothing to do with zone.
Right, we're going down to this.
It'd be really hard from a variance standpoint. Yeah, you just got to, under this thing, you're just drawing the line, mm-hmm. but you've already drawn the line on lot size. And then you also included zones, and by the councils before you.
It makes it easier for you and all of us.
Yeah.
Having dealt with very creative people in the past.
Yes,
What is the process when somebody buys some property from their neighbor, but their neighbor now doesn't meet the zoning, and then goes ahead and builds their building because they now meet your...
So if we get a building permit, we check the property.
Because you know the county will grant any change.
Right. And if and again, the legislature made some changes that made it easier for people to exchange property without going through the city. In the case of a building permit, we look at that, and if the lot doesn't comply, then we don't approve the building permit.
Well, their lot will, but their neighbor's lot will now not meet code.
Yeah. So we would look at, because we should be checking what the lot was when it was originally approved and what it looks like now, and that would lead us down the road. And potentially, I mean, it's really, really specific, right, to what's actually happening on the property.
Because I've done a lot of appraisals on the person who was nice enough to sign over their property,
mm-hmm.
and then now they're an illegal lot. And
right.
So.
Right, and it is a problem,
and
it's messy.
And I get to be the bad guy.
Yep, yep. So, if it sounds like it's at least to a point where you're comfortable with us taking it to Planning Commission. So, before we delve into what Utah Code requires and what it doesn't, how it affects Daybreak, I want to get a sense for what are your general concerns with internal accessory dwelling units, because they are more widespread. And otherwise, I'll go through the code and maybe that will bring up questions for you.
Well, the concerns I have are residents that reach out to me and they're saying, you know, there's like five families in this one house, and
mm-hmm.
a lot of parking problems and
right.
stuff like that. I mean, I hear that occasionally. Anyway.
And are they connecting it to multiple units in the house?
I haven't heard them say that.
Okay.
I don't think they know.
Right.
You know, what's actually happening in the house. They're probably awfulizing, if
right.
you will, about
That's what
the situation
is.
Awfulizing,
I like
right.
I had a resident who lives near me just recently say how two houses down from them, they have, they're renting rooms.
Yeah. That's what they think's going on, is they're renting small spaces.
Yeah, they're renting rooms. They said illegal aliens, but that I do not know.
Sure.
Just that they're renting rooms now.
Oh, we've heard it all. Yeah.
I think what I run into is anyone with a basement access, I
mm-hmm.
guess, a basement, whether it's a daylight basement or just a basement access,
mm-hmm.
they all want to put in a kitchenette and rent it out.
Mm-hmm.
And so it'd be great to have a real clear answer on that. Like, that's allowable, it's not, because they want the investment, the income opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Some are looking for what the mayor said, oh, I want my kids down there. Most are looking for income.
Yeah. Any other? I have some responses and some ideas. Any other real issues?
I mean, reading this, if the primary person has to be the homeowner, I think that eliminates a lot of problems. That doesn't happen. It's when you have a rental with a rental.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So state law. So let me just start with how internal accessory dwelling unit is defined by state law. I hate this definition. It's problematic for us. It's really hard to regulate. You know, people want to all be treated the same and they want clear rules. This is super muddy and I don't like it. So an internal accessory dwelling unit means an accessory dwelling unit created within a primary dwelling. We get that. Within the footprint of a primary dwelling at the time the internal accessory dwelling unit is created. So hard.
Where are you at?
So it's
one,
first
eight,
page.
Two.
Yep.
Oh, there we go.
So the problem with that is somebody comes in with an addition to their home that has an accessory dwelling unit. Is this really telling me I shouldn't approve that plan? And they say, okay, I'll take it out. They build the home, and then they come back and say, I now meet the definition. Pretty bureaucratic, so we don't do that. So I don't really know what that gives us. It doesn't really give us much. And then the last one is for the purpose of offering a long-term rental of 30 consecutive days or longer. So that is the one that we now ask the question. I see that you have an external entrance to your home. I see that there's a bedroom and a bathroom and a kitchen. What's your intent with this basement? 99% of the time they will say, we don't even have to use the word, do you plan to rent this out? 99% of the time they'll tell us, oh, I just, we, you know, it's for our personal use, or we're not planning to rent it out, or I'm going to have family live there. Well, guess what? Now you're not an internal accessory dwelling unit, and we can't regulate you as such. It's only when you tell us that I plan to rent this out that we can regulate you, that we can require the primary owner to sign an affidavit that says I plan to live on the property and rent out this. So this happens in Daybreak, and this happens outside of Daybreak. Anybody that contacts us and says, or submits plans, we review them, and if they're allowed an internal accessory dwelling unit, we say, here's the permit for an internal accessory dwelling unit. If they're not, then we ask them, what do you intend to do with this unit? They tell us, we don't, now it's on the record for everybody. The way to get around this is to say, I'm not renting it out. And then if they rent it out later, it's really hard to enforce against them, right? Because then at that point, we haven't checked parking. That's a huge issue in Daybreak, right? We haven't checked all these other things that in theory, when developers come to us and say, we've got this great plan to add ADUs, here's how we're going to regulate them. Well, that's not the world that we live in. This is the world we live in, which is all about an owner's intent. Oh, and by the way, a developer that's building a home is not going to own the home. They're going to sell the home. So then we're stuck with stamping the plans and saying, this is not an IADU because you're not allowed an IADU and you can't rent it out. Is the homeowner going to see those plans? I don't know. And so then we're going to get a complaint and the homeowner's going to say, well, I basically had this unit, to your point, that looked and smelled like something I could rent out. So I rented it out, and nobody told me when I bought this home that I couldn't, and I bought it because of this. So this is the challenge, and this is, you can see me get animated, because we are literally spending so much time talking about this issue, and we don't have the tools to really get our arms around it very well. And so we're doing our best, but based on that line alone, I got nothing if you tell me you're not renting it out. And I don't have code enforcement or our prosecutor here, but you get into some pretty egregious situations, and even then it's hard to make heads or tails of what's going on the property. And frankly, the legislature probably says this was the end goal. Yay, people can do what they want on their property. But we know that there's external effects to this. I'll just bring up, I wasn't going to bring up this example, but I think it's pretty illustrative of the issue in Daybreak in particular, because it is something that you've requested that we talk about, and so I want to take that request seriously. We got a call from someone that said, my neighbor and I want to share a walk, an entrance to our basements, because our houses are so close together that neither of us have the room for a path to our own basements. We don't want to rent ours out, but our neighbor does. And so really, are we telling them, okay, you can have it, but your neighbor can't? There's other issues, obviously, in that, because the houses are close together, which means parking. And we asked her, where do you intend for your tenants to park? Well, they'll park on the street like everybody else. And so there's other issues with putting a walkway across property lines and stairs, which we don't need to get into. But, you know, the first thing she said is, state law says I can do this. And we said, no, it doesn't, because state law does not apply to Daybreak, because it's not we'll just read it. Number two, in an area zoned primarily for residential use, the PC zone is a mixed-use zone. If we don't take that seriously, then I don't know what zone we would call a mixed-use zone. With the amount of flexibility that you can put commercial and residential. And we've seen that flexibility in Daybreak, and it's been a good thing, and we hope it will continue to be a good thing. So to call the PC zone anything but a mixed-use zone is a real disservice. And this law only applies to areas zoned primarily for residential use.
I have talked to their outside leading council that does their land use, all that. He agrees that PC zone is not a primarily residential use zone. It is the definition of a mixed use zone. If you look at the amount of square feet of office, commercial, industrial that's built into that zone, that word primary really makes it hard. Now, do you see a lot of residential?
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean it's primarily residential. By definition of the zone, doesn't matter what you see or feel when you drive. Because you don't think you're Daybreak when you're out by, you know, the data centers and some of the other stuff, right?
So similar to what I said in for our draft here is you have to choose internal or detached, and ultimately the effect on the neighborhood is the same, right? That's true for Daybreak as well in some ways. For properties that can qualify for a detached, I'm at least of the opinion that I don't necessarily care if that unit is above a garage or in the house because they meet the requirements to accommodate it. The challenge is the agreement, and we don't need to get into the specific words of the agreement, but it calls them ancillary units, which it was Daybreak itself during a meeting that pointed out the definition of an ancillary unit is detached. And so that's the agreement. And, you know, there's HOAs out there based on this state law that says we can't enforce restrictions against internal accessory dwelling units. That's because they're in primarily residential zones. And that's what this law applies to. It doesn't apply to mixed-use zones. And I've heard from HOAs that have, not my understanding, I'll just say that, not my understanding of what this applies to and what it doesn't. So the bottom line with Daybreak is if we want to allow internal accessory dwelling units, it would require a development agreement amendment, which I see that's not an easy task, right? And to be totally transparent, I've worked with Court Smith. They have a design guideline book that they've let me give my input, and they've been great to work with to try to work through, okay, if we allow internal units in the future, what do they look like and in what circumstances? But we're kind of to the point where it's either we amend the agreement or we continue down the path that where we're at, which is these detached units.
So there are differing opinions on this. There's one legislator who put in the bill that this applies retroactively to HOAs. My personal opinion is that doesn't withstand constitutional muster of the contracts clause, but it'd be up to the HOA to test that. That legislator lives in Daybreak and has a 3-car garage and can easily do an IADU and not have on-street parking because they have the space in their case. But it just doesn't exist under the agreement. And so they're working against the current zoning, current law. Now, if the legislature want to challenge us, if we're enforcing against, hey, or anybody else, we can go to court and so forth.
So your point is a good one. I live in Daybreak, obviously. And are there people doing internal ADUs? Yes, they are.
Oh,
some
yeah.
are getting caught by the HOA and shut down, and some are not. It's like the Wild Wild West. Like, how did you get away with it? I tried and I could. I mean, it's just ridiculous. This is not what Tamara thought 8 years ago, but Tamara today would like to see more latitude.
I'd like to see Daybreak people
be able to have what South Jordan can have.
And that, well, Daybreak is South Jordan.
I know,
but I know what you're saying.
You see what I'm saying.
But from the standpoint of, that's a policy decision that was made in 2004.
I know. I'm just saying my opinion today in 2024.
We'd love to back to you when you're ready and when the owners of the existing, or the remainder of Daybreak are ready to renegotiate that development agreement. Remember, it's happened 3 times in 20-some odd years, so it's
right.
Not something we open up willy-nilly or often.
Okay.
And frankly, this was on our list of something to address the last time it was open, but they decided they wanted to finish what we had previously negotiated and push all the other issues to later.
Mm-hmm.
And I told their attorney in that discussion, you do this, it may be years till we open it again. I don't know when the council will want to. They went into that knowingly. So whenever you're ready and they're ready, we can reopen that.
I'm not proposing strategy. I'm just saying fundamentally,
yeah.
As the council member out there, I absolutely,
one
of the council members out there, and the mayor lives out in our area too, but not the same geographic, but anyway, I have brought up to Gary and Dustin multiple times, and you, Stephen,
mm-hmm.
we need to talk about ADUs.
Well,
and this
yes.
is our time to talk, and
yeah.
I very strongly would like to see us consider this. I'm not saying now's the time, I'm not saying what the strategy is, we just need to get some clarity.
Well, and we would propose probably staff a starting point of something like the state law. From the standpoint of 6,000 square foot lot.
Yeah, if you go
an
down.
Extra parking spot.
If you
a lot
go,
of those forbidden state law. That's going to take out large portions of Daybreak. That
right.
that
right.
shared
well,
that
okay.
shared lot Stephen was just talking about.
They,
I don't know if those two lots are even 6,000 square feet. I would
right.
guess.
The lot sizes are different. We agree.
Anyway.
But I would like to
but
see
yes,
something that people
ready.
Can like hang their hat on.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you have a large lot and you're in Daybreak.
Yeah.
You have the ability to do that, and it's not all over the place with.
So the enforcement is all
it.
Over the place because a lot of if we don't like if you have a 3-car garage in Daybreak on a big lot,
mm-hmm.
and the person you rent to pulls into the garage and parks there, and they're not on the street, and they just go about living their life. Who would know?
Right.
From an enforcement standpoint, how would we ever know? What would, you know, we're just not involved in that. There are some places that get reports and from enforcement. That's where the hodgepodge is right now is on the enforcement side. The rule has been clear. I have talked to the Daybreak attorneys about this, both the in-house and out-house, as we call them, attorney outside counsel, for years now. And guess what? They know. In fact, they just sent me an email to clarify, restating it a little incorrect because they assume there are internal ADUs. Because I know they would like to push that to their customers. We were in that conversation at the time. They needed to move on, and we all know why. Great. When they're ready, you're ready. I think the staff, we've got ideas of how to do it. We have started points. It sounds like the council would be ready at a certain time. We're ready. I just want to be very clear. The rule is understood by all parties, and if it isn't, then people are not listening. But there are no internal accessory dwelling units allowed in Daybreak, either by state code, city code, or the development agreement. The development agreement defines this the ancillary as detached. That's not that's something we agreed to in 2004 or 2006. I can't remember if it was in the amendment or not. You, Steve?
I don't.
But back then, no one thought of these things the same way.
The
so should we revise it policy-wise? Probably.
And you know, as I've talked to court, it's clear from my standpoint that it's those external impacts that we're most concerned about as a city. And so they've tried to be thoughtful in there, but we're just at a point where I can't give him any more direction on how to take it to the next step. It's a design guideline book that they would give to their the people that their developers as well as the HOA to enforce. Frankly, I'm less concerned about new construction. Daybreak's shown, and I've told court this, Daybreak's shown that they're thoughtful in how they're putting things together. Some of it's more successful than others. But overall, I say there's a lot of thought going into these neighborhoods. The challenge is existing areas. How do we open the door for example, ADUs above a detached garage that's part of a townhome? And then are we opening that up for all townhomes in Daybreak that might fit that criteria? And now we're dealing with individual homeowners who sometimes don't have the same thought processes as they're thinking through what this impact is on the long term.
Policy-wise, do you want to do that? Or do you want to just say 6,000 square feet? Or in Daybreak, is it 5,000 square feet? There's nothing in state law that would stop us from
That was my question. Do we even have the ability to do that with state law saying 6,000?
Yeah, we can
so
go
page
smaller.
Two, because the PC zone is a mixed-use zone. So again, this doesn't apply to Daybreak because it's in the PC zone.
I want to be clear on something. Even outside of anything governed by that is not primarily residential or anything, if we want to give more latitude than the state law does, we want to say we think in South Jordan, we can accommodate these on 5,000 square foot lots and with the parking just this way, we could do that. We just can't say our minimum is 7,000 even though the state law says it's 6.
And that's what we're doing with the detached structures.
Yeah.
Right? Right. State law doesn't say we need to allow detached structures, period. But we've been allowing them, and this would expand it. And so that's kind of the thought process that if we were to look at Daybreak and say whether internal accessory dwelling units are should be allowed, again, we're sort of working out that context. However, state law informs some ideas of what might work because we've already experienced it in the city. So page 2, and Mary, you can cut me off whenever you're ready. We could talk about this all night. Page 2 at the bottom, there's those H, I, and J. And by the way, I crossed out some things that don't apply to our city. They still exist in the law, but don't apply to our city. So here's the things that state law, it's clear we can say. H, we can say that if you don't have a lot that's over 6,000 square feet, that you're not allowed an internal accessory dwelling unit. Let me say it a different way.
I keep wondering, Ryan, you keep saying we can say 5,000, but I thought we can't go smaller than 6,000. Am I missing that?
Oh, we can't go larger.
Larger.
So as the cutoff. We larger would be more restrictive than the state. And the state is saying at 6,000 square feet is the maximum square footage that you can prohibit. Is the minimum square footage you can prohibit on. It requires thinking of it backwards. Basically, if you're under 6,000, you can't build it under state law.
Which is why I thought you were saying, but we could say Daybreak could do a 5,000 square foot lot and do them.
We can say anywhere in the city can, because state law isn't saying that. State law is saying what we can't do is set ours at 7,000 square feet. So we can't ignore state law and have bigger requirements and stuff. They're just setting a minimum threshold. Now we can give more latitude, just like Steve said, nothing in this says we have to allow the external ADUs, but we're doing it, and we did it before this even existed. You know, we could say we don't care if you have an extra parking spot or not, because we built our roads to accommodate extra parking. So we could take out the one parking spot requirement for South Jordan if we wanted to.
The difference is I was reading it as allow, not prohibit. Yeah. Like in my mind, I'm thinking allow, and I'm 5,000's wrong. Prohibit is what we're talking about.
Exactly, right? It's a prohibit.
Well, and I said, what are we allowed to do as a city? We're allowed to prohibit, except for, anyway.
Yeah.
So the second one is cities may, they're not required, to prohibit owners of ADUs renting them out for a short-term basis. That we got lots of complaints about short-term rentals, right?
And we're working on that separately.
Yeah.
A short-term rental.
So if you have a home without an ADU, right now in our city, you can rent that out on a short-term basis. If you have a home that has an ADU, you can't rent that ADU out on a short-term basis. You can rent it out on a long-term basis, but not a short-term. And this goes to the intent of the legislation to provide affordable housing. Short-term rentals are not affordable. They're attractive to some homeowners who know they can get a lot of income from that unit, but that's not the reason we're allowing them in the community.
We might want to rethink this come about 2033. Let everybody rent out their homes for the Olympics, you know, make all their money, pay off their house, and then we'll fix it, right? I'm just saying.
We can put in the temporary.
There's a lot of people who did that last time. Yeah.
I've got it under control.
Yeah.
So, again, we have adopted this as part of our code that we don't allow short-term rentals in ADUs. The next one is prohibit the rental of an internal accessory dwelling unit if the unit is located in a dwelling that is not occupied by the owner's primary residence. So the owner has to live on the property. And the way that we try to enforce that is at the time they get the permit, if you turn to page 3, the highlighted, they have to record a notice for the internal accessory dwelling unit.
Yes, they don't.
So the notice, we have it on our website available. It's an affidavit that says, I own this property. I understand these rules of South Jordan, that by building this, here's what I'm allowed to do and here's what I'm not allowed to do. So those are sort of some of the high level things. It tells us we can't, again, that internal requirement that we used to have free flow access. If you're saying that you're not renting it out, well, we want you to prove it by not. I mean, we even got to the point where the way we define free flow is you can't even roughen a door. It's got to be an opening that would take a building permit to have to come back to the city, and we're not allowed to do that anymore.
Good.
So we're doing the full extent that we can under the law as it relates to internal accessory dwelling
units. We used to always also, it can only be a percentage of the overall, mm-hmm. The primary owner had to live in the main dwelling space. All of those provisions went out with state law. Now the primary, or the owner, can live in the ADU in a small apartment to rent out the rest of the house if they want. That's fine under state law.
So and our ordinance allowed that before, yes.
HI and J are adopted by South Georgia City.
Yes. Uh-huh. And L.
And one thing we didn't do that this allows us to do is we can exclude up to 25% of our primary residential areas from this law. We could go say, you know what, this very historic part of South Jordan that has narrow streets, we just don't think it applies here. We don't think it's good, even though it's primarily residential. The law would apply. We can carve out 25% of all of our primary residential zones and say it doesn't apply to you and take it out by legislative policy decision. We've never done that, going to mayor prohibitive or not. We've been more open. We said, you know what, if your primary residential is 100%, do it, not 75. We were ahead of the ADU, the statewide ADU by 5 to 8 years.
Yeah.
I mean, we were quite a bit ahead. We've always been ahead on this.
I actually think this external ADU, the IAU conversation that we're having, if we press forward with this and approve this, I think it also keeps us ahead, because I think it's just a matter of time before it becomes state regulation that we have to allow this is what the rule is everywhere. I think that's so soon. I think this just puts us further ahead
and
of that as well.
If you look at trends around the country, and Tamara probably speaks to this, California, other places, every detached garage, every shed is turning into some sort of habitation.
There's new industries. Mm-hmm. We have them contact us and homeowners. There's a whole industry that this is all they do is detached units. So now you have state code. I've highlighted what I think is most important to consider about what we can and cannot do, some of the definitions. And you have city code. If we need to do a deeper dive into daybreak regulations, we certainly can do that. I'll wait to hear from you.
So what would be the process of trying to clarify? I mean, obviously you've said we have to open the development agreement. Are there any other people besides myself that are like, hey, I want to look at this? I'm not saying we call up Larry H. Miller today and say, let's open up the development agreement, but I think we should look at it and not just sit back and wait.
I know I have a list of things. Us and Mayor and I, Council, you've given us things, AUs on them, for when they want to talk again. And they have a list, like the termination date, the expiration date of the agreement is high on their list. There's a number of things, so we'll be looking at one of those, I think, sooner than later. And this is on it, among other things. But
let me just clarify then, too. So what we're doing then is we're keeping a list of, here's our wish list. They're keeping a list of their wish list. And at some point, we're all going to come together and talk this through.
Like, I put ADU instead of wish list of issues we need to resolve to fix. And
perfect,
and say,
yeah.
And then there's also wish list items on both sides. So
right.
there are certain items that I think we're all really close. And we may need to do an amendment to say, hey, let's square these circles. Because these are pretty easy ones. Like,
so,
the date is one of those.
Right. So I hear that, but then we're going to go away from this meeting, and once again, it's not resolved. So is there an idea of, hey, let's try and get this resolved in 2024, or we're not going to look at this till 20? I mean,
that they have not approached that I know of the time that they want to reopen, though there's constant conversation. If you would like us to see if they're open to doing certain things on the development agreement amendment,
I'm not interested.
We could. That's up to you as a group.
We all know what our list is, that we've got their list of the things they really want to make sure are addressed. We have our list, and because there's it's a comprehensive situation.
And admittedly, when we first, I mean, Cameron was in the room, when we first started talking about ADUs, there was a lot of, it was a little bit muddy. As we've worked through it, though, it's clear that the development agreement is what needs to be. You know, we looked at amendments to the PC zone. We've had this design guideline book that provides a good picture and kind of an idea of what it could look like, maybe some of the issues. But, you know, as I talked to Ryan and others, it really comes down to we still have this hurdle of the development agreement. So there's a lot that we could sink our teeth into immediately if we wanted, but it really depends on where that is in your priorities.
I guess I'm getting a ton of, not a ton, I have a couple of vocal residents in my district that are all over, like, why are you not fixing the problem? And you're getting calls, because we've had multiple conversations about this. They're pointing a finger at the Daybreak. They're pointing a finger at City. Daybreak says it's the city's fault. The city says, no, it's Daybreak's. And so we've got this problem.
Give them a copy of the development agreement.
Well, the problem's easy to solve from that standpoint. I have a Daybreak representative here that's with the HOA. If we're all consistent in that, and you can talk to the legal counsel, let's all start sending the same message. And then just fix the problem. And if they say, okay, we just don't like the agreement, council member Zander, can you change it? Just tell us what our priority is, and we can. Both sides are amenable to doing it. There's
it will
a
be
lot
open
more.
Again.
There's more issues, but this is one.
On their side, that they're not ready to open it again yet, and there's some things that we have that would like to talk about. So we're not there yet.
I'm not asking for a premature opening of it. I'm just saying I would love to see the HOA have a clearer understanding of why we have these rules, so they're not throwing everybody at me and Stephen saying, go talk to your council member. And maybe
that's
there's
fair. I read a lot of that on the
Facebook
page.
And so they're like, why can't South Jordan? No, it's a development agreement. So
it's both of us.
Yeah.
Yep. We both need to sit down. And as long as we're clear in that, and like Steve said, this isn't in my mind a Daybreak or an HOA issue. It was muddy at first. It's taking some time. That development agreement is not easy to read, and this isn't like provision J. This is like buried in stuff. And so because of that, but I think we're all in agreement on what the rules are now. So let's get a uniform answer to people. And when we're ready to open it, let's solve the problem. I don't think we're like light years apart on the solution.
I think
everybody's pretty close.
I agree. Okay. Well, this helps with clarity. I
obviously Cameron's here.
Good discussion.
Yeah. So you can maybe talk to your HOA people that we've got the same answers going on. Thank you.
That one's easy.
Yeah.
And the answer is for them to call Tamara.
No!
And, you know, Ryan referenced it before. There's provisions in this state law, because I remember we had several HOAs reach out and said, our legal counsel is telling us this. Is that, I mean, I don't know why they're calling the city to get a second legal opinion, but they are. And, you know, even I'm sure that was a challenge for Daybreak, and we've reviewed this over and over and over again. I feel pretty confident about our interpretation.
Even if we disagreed with that provision that makes it retroactively applicable to HOAs, we have no standing. We're not an HOA. We're not affected by it. So that's when we're just not a part of it. If an HOA wants to say this doesn't apply to us because we put our rules in beforehand, I can tell you I did spend a significant amount of time looking at the contracts clause. And the only time they're overturning HOA contract or provisions that otherwise would be preempted by the contract clause is when those provisions discriminate against a protected class. So there used to be HOAs that say no person of this ethnicity moving in. Those get kicked real fast. But no ADUs usually win. So it doesn't.
Okay, we're going to wrap this up.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm here to talk
thank you.
Later if you need.
Thanks. I
appreciate it. Thanks.
I'll put you on speed dial.
All right, with that, I'm going to ask if we can get a motion to adjourn, and we will move into our regular council meeting.
So moved.
Thank you. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
We are adjourned.